I'm Peter Solomon. It's The Morning Show on Minnesota's Jazz Station 88.5. The music you're hearing right now comes from alto saxophonist Charles McPherson. It's a mid-60s recording of Dizzy Gillespie's composition Con Alma. McPherson has been a professional jazz artist since he was 19 years old. He's known for the 12 years he spent with Charles Mingus, also for his contributions to the soundtrack for Clint Eastwood's biopic Bird. And he's coming to town to play a gig at the Dakota on May 22nd. I spoke with Charles McPherson recently via Zoom. He talked to me from his home in San Diego. I began our conversation by asking him to talk about the neighborhood in Detroit where he grew up. He moved to the Motor City when he was 9 after spending his first few years in Joplin, Missouri.
Okay, well, I was blessed in that I just happened to live in the same neighborhood as the great pianist Barry Harris, who was my first mentor. I lived right around the corner. Another great musician that passed on early, named Lonnie Hillier, trumpet player, lived right on my street. Also, a great jazz club, local jazz club called the Bluebird, was right down the street from my house. When I got interested in jazz, I find out that there's a club down the street that I mentioned earlier, the Bluebird. And I started walking down and I was too young to get in. I would listen to the music. And at that time, the house band was Barry Harris on piano. Elvin Jones was the house drummer. A bass player named Beans Richardson, really wonderful bass player, but also people like Paul Chambers sometimes. Thad Jones, the trumpet player, Pepper Adams, baritone player. That was the house band right down the street from my house. And when I discovered jazz music, and especially the particular genre that I was interested in, bebop at that time, and we called it modern jazz, progressive jazz, bebop, whatever, all these different titles. But that's what it was, and that was the house band. And when I heard those guys, I was probably 14, and I knew then that, okay, I have to learn how to do this. And lo and behold, the piano player, Barry Harris, would see the young guy standing outside, and he offered to show us things, myself and anybody else that would come by his house in the afternoon. And that's how I connected with Barry. And Barry basically was responsible for telling me about harmony and theory and just the elements. And that was my beginning. And we played in Detroit. We played, at age 15, 16, 17, we played dance, proms, dances for high school. We played polkas, for a bunch of Polish people. We played blues, we played jazz. We played every kind of thing we could play, but we really wanted to play jazz.
From listening to you, I gather that Charlie Parker obviously was somebody that must have really struck a nerve. Can you talk about when you heard Charlie Parker and what your thinking was after that point? Did it change you?
Yeah, it changed me. Now, I had heard jazz music before, and I heard players and saxophone players. But when I first heard Charlie Parker, the first thing that came to my mind at that early age, which was probably about 13, when I heard him, immediately he stood out for me because I could, even though I didn't know anything about harmony or theory at that time, I could hear the logic in his playing that I didn't hear with everybody else. I heard great playing from other people. But the thing that stuck out for me, that Bird had his long musical sentences that were connected seamlessly to each other in this very linear logic way. I just heard the logic. And from that point on, I wanted to know, who is this man? And then, of course, you do research and people tell you things that know. And then I started listening to records. And then after that, I started listening to everybody that played that kind of music, not just Bird, but everybody that played the kind of music that I was interested in.
Spent the entire decade of the 1960s, or at least periodically did, working with Charles Mingus. And
yes.
I was wondering if you could talk about the impression that he made on you and what it was like to work with him.
Well, it was difficult to work with Mingus. When I first started working with him, I'm like 20 years old, 21 years old. So I'm very young, and Mingus was pretty intimidating. You know, he was already 41, 42, weighed 300 pounds, had a reputation for being volatile and contentious and irritable. And he was all of these things. But after working with him for a couple of years, there were other things that he was also. He could be very beautiful. He had actually a beautiful soul. He had a sense of ethics. You know, there were certain things he wouldn't do. He paid us well. He was a principled man. He really was. And he was complicated, probably a near genius type, very intelligent. And you have to factor in his age, the period in America that this man came up in, all of that together, you know, everything. You take one thing out of the puzzle, you've changed the whole puzzle. And so he was difficult. But after working with him a couple of years and seeing his whole self, I mean, seeing who he really was, I learned to relax and actually respect him a lot. He was a melodic genius. For me, his power of melodicism that he would find, especially in writing ballads, had this deep, haunting quality. And haunting as well, and yet an unusual harmonic sense as well. There were a lot of curveballs, all of little harmonic surprises. He was kind of a Renaissance man. You know, he wrote poetry, he wrote lyrics to his songs, to his tunes. He wrote protest music. So because my involvement with Mingus was from roughly 1960, all through the 60s up until about 72. And, you know, all of that was tumultuous times. And in New York, it was a very interesting time for a young person to be living in New York in the 60s. And so the collective consciousness of the whole world at that time was a certain way. And this produces certain art. And Mingus was very in touch with all of the, you know, all the racism, segregationist, just everything. And he wrote songs that spoke to that. I learned a lot from him, working with him. So all the information I got from Barry Harris and the bebop movement, and then my involvement with Mingus. And you know, after a while, you know, it's like musical gumbo. You know, you just stir all that stuff up. And that basically had a lot to do with how I think about music now, all those influences. And then, you know, you come with your own stuff besides what you glean from your surroundings. And then when you mix all that stuff up, you have whoever you are, whomever you are.
Can you talk about the experience of recording the soundtrack for Bird, for the Clint Eastwood film?
Yeah, I was assigned to do that. The musical director for Clint Eastwood and most of his movies was a wonderful alto player named Lenny Niehaus. Really, really wonderful alto player, good musician. So he wrote a lot of Clint Eastwood's scores. It had a lot to do with it. And I guess he knew who I was. Somebody might have sent him a tape or something, and he said, okay, I want him. And so I was involved in that. Now, I wasn't in any visuals. It was just soundtrack. And how I was used, basically, was to play the alto where there wasn't any recorded documentation of Bird himself playing. So there were scenes in the movie that actually happened in real life, but there was no documentation of it. Like there was a wedding up in the mountains in New York City. And Bird and Red Rodney, the trumpet player, played the wedding. Well, that actually happened. So anything that involved Bird and no documentation, I was pretty much the alto player. And also the actor, I think it was
Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker played Bird. So I also tutored him on how to hold the saxophone and how to look like he's playing to a particular record that was Charlie Parker. So, you know, I had to, you know, as much as possible show him, you know, how to hold his fingers and move them as much as accurately as he could to what Bird is playing, which is no easy feat, by the way. And Clint Eastwood was in the studio, so I got a chance to kind of talk to him, which he's an interesting man. And, you know, he's not the cowboy that everybody thinks he is. He's actually was a pretty astute businessman. Also, he's a real jazz fan. He really liked Charlie Parker. He told me an interesting story. He said he went to one of the jazz at the Philharmonics in L.A. And he really went there to see Lester Young and a bunch of people. And Charlie Parker happened to be at this Philharmonic concert as well. And I think he knew who Bird was, but he hadn't really heard him. And Clint Eastwood actually told me that when he saw Charlie Parker, he had like an epiphany. And it was like, he said he had so much self-confidence and assuredness. He was so perfect and direct and just exuding this confidence without arrogance. It's just there. And he said in that moment, he realized that this model that this man is exhibiting by way of music is the way I'm supposed to do film. I'm supposed to have this kind of assuredness, know what I want, technique, I'm supposed to be like that. And he said Charlie Parker, it was like just him and his persona that actually made him think that way, that this is a model for whatever you want to do, is this kind of excellence and this kind of self-assuredness. I thought that was very interesting.
That is interesting. So I know in recent years, at least 2019, I know you did this. You wrote music that was recorded for projects with the San Diego Ballet, and I was wondering if you could talk about writing for dance and if you had to adapt your composition or if you learned from that experience.
Yeah, I did learn from that because, you know, of course, until that time, I just wrote for instruments, of course. But now writing for dance will pull another part of your consciousness into play. And then I started thinking about movement as well as chords and melody and rhythm. And I started thinking very episodically. Some kind of way, when you're consigned to play and this dance piece is supposed to represent a certain emotionality, it sort of keeps you on the railroad track on really making that the focus point and bringing music to the emotionality you want as opposed to the other way around. This is kind of what I learned in writing for dance. And it's very interesting because there are certain things that you would think of by letting other things other than just the notes and music be the genesis of an idea as opposed to just pure music. And you will choose certain notes, certain chords, and certain ways to do things that you would never do thinking only of music. And that's what you learn. So basically what you do, some kind of way you will gain more dimension, is a good thing.
Like a new way of telling a story or something.
Yeah, more than one way, you know.
Do you know who you're bringing with you to the Dakota?
Yes, I do. Some really great musicians. So there will be Terrell Stafford on trumpet. And he's on my latest record called
Reverence.
Yeah. Yes, a CD called Reverence. It's dedicated to my mentor, my first mentor, Barry Harris. And Terrell Stafford is the trumpet player. Billy Drummond, wonderful drummer. And Randy Porter, really wonderful piano player that is originally from San Diego, but he moved to Oregon. And Boris Koslaw. So Boris is the bass player that is involved with the Mingus Dynasty Band. And he's a wonderful bass player. So that's the group.
Is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to say before your gig?
Well, I'm looking forward to playing. I haven't been to many, I haven't been there in quite a while, in many years. So I'm looking forward to playing and meeting the people and just playing with these great musicians. So I'm looking forward to the engagement, of course. That is part of a tour. We go to Cincinnati, we go to the Atlanta Jazz Festival. And so Minnesota's part of the tour.
I'm glad that Minnesota's part of that tour and that you're coming here. I think it's going to be a unique opportunity, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me this morning.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for having me, and I wish you well.
You too.